Wadah Khanfer is the former Director General of Al Jazeera. This morning, the Qatari Prime Minister called on the international community to arm Syria's opposition and for the Arab countries to provide a safe haven for rebels. What do you think should be done to bring violence in Syria to a halt? Do you see a risk that outside interventions could make matters worse?
Actually, the violence in Syria started by the government, and the opposition and the people on the street actually did determine to continue peacefully their revolution. But the amount of violence that we have seen during the last 11 months almost is unprecedented. And therefore, you know, a lot of people are now demanding some kind of support to Free Syrian Army. And this Free Syrian Army is actually seen as legitimate force that is trying to protect the civilians. They are not definitely, according to, you know, some critics here, I have heard people saying that they might not be as organized as we would like them to be. But again, this is the only option that the people have to protect them against the official army. The second point, which is important, the Syrian people see the international society abandoning them in a way or another. Since the veto on the Security Council resolution until today, we did not see a viable option in front of the international society or something that was really solid given to the people. And this feeling is actually very harmful because it might create a lot of disparate approaches to violence that might even promote some kind of unwanted forces to come in and try also to be part of the scene. Although so far the Syrians are in fact trying their best not to go into sectarian violence and not also to welcome foreigners to come help them in the fight against the regime. The only way to make this scenario survive is through supporting the Free Syrian Army rather than foreign intervention. Direct foreign intervention in the style of Libya, in my opinion, might complicate the reality and create a huge problem in the region. But I think the Syrians themselves are capable of handling it if they find the proper sources of funding and the proper sources of support from the international and the regional countries.
But might not indirect foreign intervention also complicate things? I mean, where you have every neighbor arming the Free Syrian Army as they please, which is what seems to have been suggested here.
Actually, I do believe that already the Syrian regime is supported by some countries in the region and internationally. And already they have access to weapons and they have access to sources, resources. So the Free Syrian Army, although they are now fighting in order to protect certain civilian movements in the country, but definitely they do not have any equivalent power to the regime, and they don't have permanent support. What is needed is to coordinate this kind of action by the neighbors themselves and the international society, so it becomes systematically possible to actually push for more protection of the civilians through this military support.
Moving on to Iran, do you envisage an attack on Iran, and how would that affect the Arab Spring and political alignments in the region?
An attack on Iran is going to be a disaster in the region. It will create a lot of troubles and complexities. Now, anything that could interfere in the quest of the Arabs of democracy and transformation towards democracy is going to be very serious at this moment in time. People have hope, and eventually, after decades of oppression and authoritarian regimes, they have been able for the first time to go forward in the path of democracy. An attack against Iran will put that on hold, will create a lot of new priorities and alliances, and will divert the attention from the process of democracy and democratization into conflicts, will create economic and international complexities that might not be at all of any benefit for the region. So this is why I think an attack on Iran is very serious. Now, all parties are not very clear about it, in a way that the Israelis who are threatening this kind of attack, so far they are keeping some kind of gray area where sometimes you feel some of the officials are speaking with louder voices and some others are playing it down. And this tactic is creating this kind of anxiety. To what extent that might materialize into a solid attack, of course, depends on the international society, especially the Americans, to what extent the Americans can convince the Israelis and interfere in it, to what extent the British and many other forces in the region that could really find any other solution rather than military confrontation.
I'd like to just pick up again on the theme of political alignments in the region. People often talk about the differences between monarchies and republics when discussing the Arab Spring. Do you think that such a framework is useful or misleading? How do you see the future of the monarchies in the region?
I think the monarchies in the region are going to be affected by the Arab Spring in the way that might be different from the republics in the region. So we have seen a scenario that has taken place in Morocco, which I feel that it really did a great solution for this particular dilemma, where we did witness free and fair elections and then a formation of a government that is legitimate in the sight of the people. And that is a useful solution, of course, after the amendment of the constitution. This scenario, if it happens in the rest of the monarchies, it might prevent any further escalation of any kind of tension in the societies. But let us see the big picture. The big picture is the following. The Arab world right now has started a process, and that might take time. It is not 1 year or 2 years. It might be longer than that. And this process, it depends on how governments are going to handle it. If they would like to see it as a natural growth of aspiration and a legitimate transformation in the age of internet and the age of connectivity, I think they will succeed in really having some kind of good ending for all the troubles that we face. But if they resist that and they view it as a conspiracy, and view it as some kind of foreign intervention or some kind of, anarchic progress from within the people, I think, in my opinion, this will be disastrous and might lead to further complexity.
The Muslim Brotherhood and the Salafis in Egypt did very well, as did Ennahda in Tunisia. We often hear about these parties as homogenous blocs. Could you tell us more about the debates taking place within the Islamist groups, for example, between the old guard and the youth wings?
The political Islam phenomena definitely is not homogeneous, and it is not an accomplished project. It is not an accomplished, it is a project that is evolving. From 1928, when Muslim Brotherhood movement started in Egypt, until today, there is continuous brainstorming and thinking and evolution within the discourse of Islamists. So therefore, I would argue that the current movement in the Arab world, especially in Egypt and Tunisia, Yemen, and many other Arab countries, are shifting towards the model of democracy and embracing the universal values of human rights more than anything else, because this is the only model that they have in front of them. They cannot, of course, follow other models, like the Taliban model. It has its own cultural roots. They are not going to follow the Iranian model, which has also its own religious and cultural roots and perception about how government should operate. So the only model that is open for the Arab world at this moment in time is democracy and democratic model. This is why Islamists, let us call them Islamists for now, because the word Islamist itself, unfortunately, should be qualified. Not all Islamists share the same values, but I call now this group of people who are ascending to power and trying to be part of the democratic process as Muslim Democrats rather than Islamists. I think they are in a process of transforming themselves to a much more open approach to the society, less ideological, more value-centered, and more inclusive than exclusive.
To talk about another type of Democrat, I want to now talk about young people who form the vanguard of the revolution but are already losing out as more established players take the front stage. How can they ensure that they remain an influential political force, especially when the activism was value-driven and not ideological, and also organizationally when they've been decentralized as opposed to the political parties who are far more centralized?
Networks, without any doubt, did play a major role in the revolution. And networks did introduce to all of us a new model of movement that is by nature democratic, because networks are democratic by nature, and does not have the legacy that might restrict it from imagining a radical change. Because most of the traditional political institutions in the Arab world during the last few decades were actually pushed away, and they were banned from progress, and they did develop much more ideological and much more exclusive way of thinking about themselves and the world. And the government eventually defined the boundaries of their movement. So no one was talking about radical change in the Arab world towards democracy and freedom. They were talking about enhancing the current status quo. Networks did speak about change and bringing down regimes. And that was a surprise for everyone. Plus the fact that they're more flexible, dynamic, they reach out, and the democratic approach that they had did make things succeed. And as you said, they are value-centered, not ideologically centered. This is during the first few days of the revolution and the build-up for the revolution. But of course, in the process of building constitution or process of electing people for the National Assembly, you are going to go to well-established organizations, which is political groups and parties. And I did notice that most of the youth were left out from this transformation in the struggle for democracy. They have a major role to play. They have to continue watching the political process, and they have to continue advocating the ideals. Instead of these ideals pragmatically become or realistically become low in the priority of those who have been elected to power, I think the youth should continue pushing for much more freedom, much more human rights, much more liberal approach towards everyone. And therefore, definitely, they continue to be relevant. There is a dilemma in the way that networks operate. No one could figure out yet how could we come up with a version of a network that is practically capable of establishing itself within the political atmosphere, within the political system, without converting itself into hierarchical organization like a traditional political party. Mm-hmm. This is a major problem, but I think there will be some kind of model in between where it drives from the network its best and from the organizational structure its best and comes up with a solution. And definitely this is what Ashark Forum, the initiative that I am now involved in, is trying actually to do and to work with both youth and political parties and groups.
Yeah, I think it is a dilemma for them. Do they join the political game in the traditional sense, or do they stay outside of it and act as a pressure group or form lobbies? Turning to countries that are in transition, even when the leader has been removed, the old system is still in place. The military, the bureaucracy, the elites, the security services remain there. How do you deal with entrenched interests? You've described the challenge of infusing the culture of democracy into the system, but how do you actually do it?
I do understand that transformation towards democracy, it comes with its own challenges. Bureaucracy most likely will not be very happy with transformation, swift transformation, because again, as you said, there is a system, and there is also institutional memory in the state, which normally resist dramatic change. So that is a threat. The second threat as well is the issue of overarching values that the community should start establishing, which is necessary for constitutions to be built and political consensus on the rules of the new game of politics. I do understand in the democratic discourse to have differences and competition amongst political groups, but that should not always reach the point of redefining the values of democracy itself that the society is trying to achieve. So there is a lot should be done in a form of dialogue between Islamists, secularists, and leftists in the Arab world and nationalists. They should sit down and they should debate and argue about what kind of future that they would like to see, regardless of how to reach there. How to reach there, that's a matter of politics. Let us compete and find ways of settling our competition through democracy and ballots. But where would you like to be that is a matter of the consensus where the nation really should have some kind of values agreed upon for the future. Dialogue is necessary. Now, the international society has a major role to play. The threat always that international intervention in the Middle East, especially in the Arab world, used to be seen negative factor, used to be hinder the transformation to democracy. Now I think the international society should embrace the result of democracy and should acknowledge and recognize the new leaders who emerge from this democratic process, regardless if they are Islamists or secularists, and they should try to positively accommodate this kind of process within their economic and international system. We need this kind of support. We need to embrace this transformation, not to be suspicious. I have seen a lot of skeptical politicians, skeptical journalists, you know, trying to think of the Arab Spring as an Islamist winter or as an end of a hope for change. No, I think what's happening in the Arab world is natural progress. We have to go through this road. It might be rough. It might be a little bit difficult. But eventually, we are moving into the right direction.
In your forum, actually, as you were saying earlier, is playing a key role in getting the different groups to engage in dialogue, especially when it comes to the drafting of the constitution. You've led Al Jazeera during its rise to global prominence. Social media and television, Al Jazeera in particular, have widely been perceived as having played an influential role in enabling the Arab uprisings. In your assessment, how big was the influence of media on the uprisings, and to which extent has this influence been hyped?
I would say that Al Jazeera did play, during the last 15 years, major role in the transformation in the Arab world. But transformation, why? Because you have given the people options, the opinion and the other opinion. You have given them the voices of those who have never had voice before. So you have widened the horizon and the debate and discussion within the society about what shape and what future everyone would like to see. However, the immediate cause of the revolution or the immediate heroes of the revolution are the people, neither Al Jazeera nor any other element in the society. It was the people themselves who did march in Tahrir Square or march before that in Sidi Bouzid or march wherever in Sana'a and Aden. They are the people, the heroes of this revolution. Social networks play a major role in providing platform of coverage and mobilization at the beginning of the revolution. Al Jazeera did play a major role starting from 28th of January in Tahrir Square when internet was brought down by the government of Egypt and traditional media did start picking up on the story and amplifying the voices of the public. But later on, a new ecosystem, balanced one between traditional media and social networks, did marvelous job of covering the revolution in a way that actually it was balanced and in a way that governments could not hinder this coverage. You remember that the Egyptian government brought down the signal of Al Jazeera from one of the satellites in the Arab world, prominent one. But definitely social networks were very handy and very useful. And this kind of relationship between social networks and traditional media was very important. I call that day the day when a new ecosystem emerged in journalism, not only in the Arab world, but I do believe that it will affect the way that we see journalism and the news gathering internationally.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the interview.
Most welcome. Thank you very much.